The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Of course, it's Christmas party season. There's lots of people out at night at the moment, perhaps more so than other times of the year. But how safe do you actually feel? Do you feel safe if you're walking home, if you're taking a taxi? And this is something that applies to both women and men, but I suppose we've seen stories in recent days about rapes and sexual assaults against women, which raises concerns. And of course, there's also a lot of men who are concerned about physical assault as well when they're on their way home. We have a number of guests with us to talk about what you should do and what you shouldn't do, whether there's too much fear about what's going on. I'm going to start with you, Cliona Sadler, Executive Director of the Rape Crisis Network Ireland. Is this a time of year when people perhaps are partying, drinking more? You hear stories of cocaine use, that people have to be more aware of their circumstances and be careful.
I think it's certainly the conversation about Christmas and when the Christmas season comes and sexual violence and the risk of sexual violence. It's almost like that has become a tradition. It's become an integral part of the Christmas season is a conversation about the risks of sexual violence. And I do have to wonder about that. We have no actual prevalence data that proves that there is an increase in sexual violence and an increase in risk over the Christmas period. You are just as vulnerable, particularly as a woman, any time of the year.
So I suppose it's because there's more people out. I mean, you
absolutely
see the pubs are full, the restaurants are full, people are finding it hard to get taxis, so they end up walking perhaps in situations where they normally would get a taxi.
Absolutely. So we focus on this conversation and we ask questions around it. We had a piece of research across Europe which looked at the incidence of sexual violence experienced by people and also asked a question about to what extent they feared being the victims of sexual violence. And what that survey found was that the Irish were more fearful, Irish women in particular were more fearful than any other Europeans.
And really?
Yes, indeed. And in terms of the distance between prevalence and our fear levels, we had the biggest gap between those two points. So there's something for us about how are we generating safety through a conversation about fear? And actually, is that the best way to go about it? So for us, that's our starting point in terms of this conversation. And I think we need to think about, you know, is it women's freedoms, you know, women's freedom of movement, is that the problem? Do we need to talk about that? And maybe we need to say, actually, that was never, we need to categorically say, it isn't the problem, it was never the problem. We need to focus on what actually is the problem, which are the choices being made by those who target them.
But could it be that because people are fearful, women are fearful, and let's say as well, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of men who feel uncomfortable perhaps walking home. Are there parents of teenage boys or young men who are scared for them perhaps being assaulted, if not sexually assaulted? Mm-hmm. But that because of that fear factor, people are perhaps more careful, which is why our prevalence levels are lower. Could that be the case?
Well, I mean, the relationship between all of these, you know, we don't know is the answer to that. That's a complex set of relationships. There's no question that people are sexually assaulted during the Christmas season. They're sexually assaulted in new and different ways, in particular ways, because of the increased level of engagement in alcohol and in partying and, as you say, drug taking, but also in new groups of people. You know, we move into different groups of people in socialising with different groups of people over the Christmas season. For example, we go out with work colleagues we may never socialise with normally. So we're in different settings with different groups of people and we're probably drinking a little more than we used to the rest of the year. Although we binge drink all year round, of course, in Ireland, it's a national problem. So that offers a set of opportunities and a set of risks in its own right. But it's simply about the risk moving to a new location and a new context.
We also have Seán Cal with us, President of the Union Students of Ireland. And this is presumably an issue for many of your members in the universities and colleges, particularly, you know, if they've left school, they've gone into adult life, they have more freedom than perhaps they would have had as secondary school students. How much care do they feel they need to take of themselves?
I think Cliona is right. I think that there's certainly a lot of women feel in particular under pressure when it comes to, you know, the party season and that kind of thing. And I think that, you know, despite that, I think it's just a change of context. I don't think that people are any more at risk, you know, at a Christmas party than they are other times in the year. But certainly for young people, I think, you know, our main message as the Union Students in Ireland would be talking to our members and students across the country is about making plans in relation to your night out. So, I mean, if you are in that different context because you're coming home from, you know, from college and just on a very basic pieces, like, you know, you might be used to now socialising in areas that are well lit, you know, taxis in general general readily available, but then you might be going to a context maybe in some part of rural Ireland where you're expected to actually walk home from the bar and people are wearing extremely dark clothes. Like things like that, that are like practical things that I think a lot of young people and students, you know, with the with that change of context might not be as aware of. So look, we're talking about...
Sorry, you could be in a situation if you're going home, you might be as much at risk of getting knocked down by a car as you would be have been assaulted.
Of course, there's all sorts of dangers after a night out. And I think, you know, even on a personal basis, you know, I don't always feel like comfortable or feel safe walking home from nightclubs in Dublin. And it completely depends on what areas you walk home on in, as you referenced even there in the introduction, in relation to being able to access, you know, taxis, etc. in Dublin city centre. That's always difficult. But I suppose our main message is around kind of making a plan and just around the basics, around, you know, eating, hydrating, you know, before you go out on a night out, knowing what you're drinking, having a plan around, you know, have you told friends, who are you with? If you're going, if your plans change about who you're going home with, which is absolutely fine, then have you told somebody? And all of those things are about your own personal safety.
Okay. Just before I get to Colette Brown, what about the use of taxis as well? Because should you actually always try and book taxis via an app rather than just picking up a taxi on the street which you haven't booked and you may not be sure as to who it is picking you up?
There's absolutely various experiences. I think particularly after a night out in Dublin, it's extremely difficult to get online apps to respond to you. But at the same time, it is found like across different unions of students saying that, you know, apps tend to be a good way of making sure that you've got cash on you. If you don't have cash on you or something gets stolen or gets left behind, that you can use your app to book a taxi. So it's considered a safe ride home. But I wouldn't recommend one or the other, because sometimes it's impossible to get either.
And of course, your phone might have run out of power, which means you can't use your app. Colette Brown, of course, I mean, we don't want to get into anything of victim blaming here, because everybody should be able to walk home, no matter whether they're drunk or sober, no matter what time of the night it is, without fear of being assaulted by somebody else. The perpetrators are to blame. But yet, what sort of care do people have to take, because there are people out there who will try and take advantage of us?
But you see, yeah, I think that's an interesting question. And I think what Cliona mentioned earlier, the study that she mentioned, I think the result of that was quite interesting. I hadn't heard that before. So that the perception of risk that's out there, particularly among Irish women, is much greater than the actual incidence of reported crime. So that are we all kind of going around a bit too terrified, you know, than we should be, and maybe not living our lives to the, you know, the best extent that we could be? Personally, I walk everywhere in Dublin after nights out. I would tend to walk home as well if I can't be bothered waiting for a cab. I usually feel safe. You know, I live kind of city centre. The roads that I walk past would be kind of well lit. So I don't have those concerns generally. But then most women probably wouldn't have those concerns. But then they're worried about, you know, the one incident, the minority person who could potentially be a perpetrator of some kind of sexual attack or maybe an assault. And last year, for instance, the CSO figures about sexual offences, they did go up and they were up 16.9% but between 2016 and 2017. But then there has to be a caveat with that, because the data that the guards were providing to the CSO before then, they were a bit questionable. So we're not quite sure whether the jump was as great as that. For instance, for assaults and threats and things like that, they jumped 13%, and predominantly assaults are on men between 18 and 34 by men between aged 18 and 34. And the largest number of those assaults will be carried out between, say, 8 p.m. and 3 a.m. So is the perception of risk among women greater than it should be, when actually it's men who are the subject to the most assaults on nights out?
I mean, who are the most vulnerable? Because you hear it's not necessarily sexual assaults, it's random punches been thrown outside pubs, outside chippers, whatever.
Yeah, and I mean, women with, you know, with good reason, because, you know, physically you're less strong than a man, so obviously when you're out, and particularly by yourself, you can feel vulnerable. But actually it can be young men who are out at night who can, you know, be legitimately at a greater risk, and the stats would seem to bear that out.
Okay, I'll put on your headphones, please, because we have another guest with us on the phone, representative of the Irish Taxi Drivers Federation, Joe Heron. Joe, very good evening to you.
How are you doing, Matt?
Now, I presume if somebody flags down a taxi on the street, that they will be getting a legitimate taxi if it has a roof sign on it?
Or do they have reason to fear? Sorry, Matt.
Sorry, do they have reason to fear sometimes that there are sort of counterfeit taxi drivers out there?
It's very, very tiny, that, and I haven't heard of it for a while even, Matt. It is highly unlikely that it would be a fake taxi that they would get. Once it has the roof sign and the decals on the door. But we would always advise people, if they have any reason to suspect it, put in one of the numbers into the app, the driver check app, which you can download from the National Transport Authority. It's very simple to download, only takes a couple of seconds, and it's very worthwhile. You can put in either the car's registration number, the roof sign number, or the dash ID number that you'll see when you get inside the taxi, any of them. And it also has, that app has the facility for you to send those details instantly to a friend if you have any reason. But it is highly unlikely that you will get a fake taxi. Highly unlikely.
Joe, I've heard complaints from colleagues about being unable to get taxis. These are young women, because they've been told, oh, you're not going far enough. We want to take people on a longer journey, and then refusing to let them into the taxi. Is that legal on the part of a taxi driver to refuse a fare because he or she doesn't believe it's going to be lucrative enough?
No, no, it isn't. And it's a nonsensical thing for the driver to do, Matt, because for the start, the first half kilometre is 4.20 or 4.20 or 3.80, depending on what time you're on at. And so if you're paying 4.20 for the first half kilometre and then paying at the rate of 1.20 or 1.14, after that, it doesn't make sense not to take a job because it's going a short journey. But legally, you are not entitled to take it or to refuse a job if it's only going a short journey. You can refuse a job if it's going more than 30 kilometres, but not less than that.
Okay, in what circumstances can a taxi refuse to take a fare?
Well, the one I've just mentioned, if they were going over 30 kilometres and they didn't want to. Other than that, if somebody was disorderly or abusive or offensive, you could refuse them. Or somebody wanting to bring in food and drink. Or somebody whose clothing is badly soiled and who might soil the inside of the taxi. Those, they're reasons, they're genuine reasons for refusing.
Okay, we're getting lots of texts in from listeners who say, and this is like in Dublin last weekend and other parts of the country, trying to flag down taxis with the lights on, which are empty, and the taxi drivers just sail past. Everyone in the studio is nodding at me as I say that. Yeah, clearly you've all had this experience.
Yeah, of course, yeah. One of the reasons that to my mind, all meters should be connected to the roof sign, so that when the driver switches it on the meter, it goes off or whatever. But lots of drivers just simply forget to put off the roof sign when they are going to collect somebody. For example, if they were with one of the app companies and they get a job to go and pick up somewhere, quite a lot of drivers forget to switch the roof sign off. And so the passing people, while their roof sign is lighting and they're going on the job, but the people obviously don't know that they're going on the job.
All right, I leave you go, Joe Heron. Thank you very much from the Irish Taxi Drivers Federation. Listener says, I bought my daughter a personal alarm. Looks like a keyring, but emits a siren sound of 120 decibels when pulled. Should, Tina Sadler, should people be carrying personal alarms with them, or is that too alarmist?
Well, I suppose there's a lot of things that, in terms of, you know, just going out, I would say, look, you know, what helps you to move out and to get out in the world and be, you know, go where you wish to go and be free to do that. Whatever helps you there, that's not a problem and should never be constructed as a problem. What I would say is, you know, the previous speaker, he was talking about the apps and the traceability. And obviously there is. The issue of being able to trace your driver—that's the key part about that increased safety. But we're not just talking about an app here. We're talking about accountability. We're talking about someone actually knowing that they are known, will be known, can be known, will be identified. They can be held accountable. And this is what we talk about when we talk about the Christmas season, where the rules go out the window. So, you know, are we now in situations where people feel that they can get away with something because they're not known, they're not accountable, they're not traceable? So this is the issue about the change of context.
Michelle, something else that strikes me as interesting is that I would have thought that in secondary schools in particular, this modern generation has been taught more about mindfulness and respect for other people. And yet we still have generation after generation this sort of attitude of violence and whatever and entitlement.
Well, certainly if you're looking at and any of that education is welcome, but like they're not getting any sexual health or consent information, really. And that's been, I mean, that's been broadly debated, particularly in the last number of months. And I think that's coming to the fore here when you're looking at anything in relation to the rise in sexual assaults or us talking about sexual assaults at the moment. The education hasn't been there, and that's been a big problem.
What about that point, Colette? I mean, that it seems to be just every generation has these problems, and we don't seem to be improving as humans in relation to our respect of other people and the boundaries that should be there.
Well, I think that you can also take an alternate view, and you can say that because we have these discussions and because we are having talks like this and there is more education, then reporting of crimes of this nature goes up because people feel comfortable coming forward. And we saw that with the Me Too movement, and there was a spike in the, you know, increase of sexual offences. I don't think I mentioned the actual figures for sexual offences actually earlier. I said sexual offences in 2017, 2,945 versus assaults and harassment of 18,803.
Yeah, but so sexual assaults, I mean, that could be issues of reported, isn't it? Because very often, unfortunately,
this is
many
just
issues,
reported, yeah. And there is an underreporting of those kind of crimes. But that, you know, my point is that although there is a chronic underreporting of those crimes, the only way that we are going to get more people to come forward is through having discussion, is through having debate, is through having education in schools.
I think can I say Tina, if yes. I was to give like one piece, if I was to say one piece in terms of the Christmas season, and if we're going to do this piece of making this an annual event around Christmas,
there's no harm in having an
awareness raising conversation. So let's give one thing. We have a continuum and a spectrum, and you're saying, why are we not improving? This isn't a conversation just about rape and sexual assault. This is a conversation about the whole spectrum, all the way through from the minor all the way through, and the conversations I've had with men around how they touch women in nightclubs and pubs, where we're in crowded spaces. And the message, you know, is if you are touching women's waist or back or lower back as you pass them or your friends without permission, that you know, stop it. You know, the only place that we can actually you can, if you like, safely and neutrally touch another person. You do need to occasionally get someone's attention in a crowd.
There was a study done in Brazil recently on this. We discussed it on the programme, where these special clothes were worn to see how often people were touched in pubs and nightclubs, and it was extraordinarily high.
And I would say the only place that you can legitimately touch a stranger or even someone you know that you're not intimate with is the shoulder. You know, to tap someone's shoulder is probably the only safe place, and I could be contradicted on that.
This results to say that women have to show the same respect to
indeed,
men.
There
are women as well who touch men
absolutely.
In pubs and nightclubs.
What I would
like
also
that.
Say is if you're doing that, notice that you don't do it to, you do it to one gender only, probably, and not everyone. Indiscriminately.
Tell me about Ask Angela.
Oh yeah, so this is an initiative that the An Garda Síochána launched in the last year, basically, and it's basically talking to staff of both nightclubs and pubs around the country. It's in Waterford, it's in Cork, it's in some places in Dublin. And basically, it's that if you're being harassed, you're in the bar because you're having a casual drink or because you're on a date or whatever, but you're actually being harassed or you are seriously concerned about your safety, which does happen, you can actually go up to bar staff, ask for Angela, and the bar staff will know that their response should be to remove you from the situation and allow you to leave the bar
and
safely.
Are the bar staff getting training to
do that? Yeah, they're getting training, and the Gardaí are speaking to them about
any
that.
Any idea of how well that's working?
I believe through the guards that the feedback on it, you know, it has been that it's been extremely successful, that it's not like the take-up doesn't need to be huge for it to be successful. If it assists one person because they were able to go up to their local bar when they were in extremely, you know, quite a dangerous scenario, felt like they were, you know, being harassed, maybe being inappropriately touched, etc., and felt like they needed to leave, that they could actually ask somebody. And I think it's a really welcome
I've
initiative.
Seen those posters in bathrooms, in female toilets in pubs in Dublin, and I imagine it's comforting if you're there and, you know, you don't know, maybe you're on a blind date, maybe something like that, and
or just
to
just
have
get
it
hassled by some creep.
Yeah, so I mean, you know it's there, and it's. I think it's a very good initiative.
Indeed, it's gender neutral as well. I mean, it's gender neutral. It's not if you're a guy similarly, and you feel really under pressure, and you think that there's something about to go down, that you can
which
go
can
up
happen because you might be afraid that once you walk out of the pub or whatever, that you might take a dig or something like that. To get a little bit of help from the barman could be very useful.
My understanding is that the businesses are really up for this, yeah. And that really helps, you know, because it changes the atmosphere. You know, when you see that poster, you know you're in a place that is aware and is you know out there for you. And changes the atmosphere.
Siona Cahill from USI, Cliona Sadlier from the Rape Crisis Network Ireland, and Colette Brown, columnist for the Irish Independent. Thank you all very much for being with us on The Last Word on Today FM.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.